Hey, and welcome to another episode of the Learn to Code with Me podcast. I'm your host, Laurence Bradford. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to share something special with you. If you're listening to this episode around the time that it goes live, we are right around the corner from our Learn to Code with Me annual bundle sale. It's called the Ultimate Tech Career Toolbox. We only do this sale once a year, so it's a really big deal when we do it. Basically, we collect coding and other technical online products from top-notch course creators in the space. This year, we actually have 33 different products and online courses. Here's the catch though. The sale only goes on for 5 days only, but during that time, you can get all of these courses for basically the price of one. This year, the sale is happening from Monday, June 22nd to Friday, June 26th. And you can find out more at learntocodewith.me/toolbox2020. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/toolbox2020. In fact, today's podcast guest is actually one of the bundle contributors. Her name is Rebecca Garcia. And Rebecca Garcia has an awesome story. After deciding to leave college early, she taught herself how to code and soon after landed a job as a developer. She has spent 7 years working in various technical roles at startups and big name companies alike. She's actually worked at companies like Microsoft and Squarespace. Even more than that, she actually co-founded a nonprofit that teaches kids how to code. And she even has gotten paid to travel to speak at events all around the world. Her story is awesome. Nowadays, she helps others get careers in the tech industry through one-on-one coaching and online courses that she creates. And one of them is in our Ultimate Tech Career Toolbox bundle sale. All right, let's get into Rebecca's interview. Hey, Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to talk to you today, and I just want to dive into things. You don't have a degree in computer science, so how did you first get introduced to coding and then eventually product management?
So the way that I actually got into technology was when I was little, around 11 or 12, you know, I started learning to code through this site called Neopets. I'm sure you've had a couple of guests who have also had their start that way, and I was copying and pasting a lot of HTML and CSS and kind of learning the basics that way. And I didn't think anything of it at the time. And I didn't have any role models per se to look to or think about, you know, there's a career out there for me in tech. And my sister actually saw like, hey, I think you're really good at this technology thing. And I kind of dragged my feet. And as I was, I think around 14 or 15 or so, I like to call it indentured servitude of babysitting. She actually paid for me to go to a computer program at MIT. I call it very fondly Computer Nerd Camp. And it unlocked for me this idea that, you know, I didn't have to be good at math, that technology could be fun and creative. And at the time, I thought I wanted to be a video game developer. And I learned that that's not what I wanted to do. But I was so glad that I learned it at an early age. And that just continued that love of learning through technology for me. And once that kind of piece was unlocked, you know, it was something I continued doing. And when I went off to college, actually, I didn't think of majoring in computer science because I started looking at the curriculum for computer science and I realized that I had already been teaching myself web development and I wasn't as interested in more of the algorithms and the backend stuff at the time. And there wasn't as many relevant classes. So I made the conscious decision not to major in computer science. And I actually went in undeclared, took, you know, handful of classes thinking maybe I would major in political science. I ended up diving into business management. I got introduced to the idea of entrepreneurship and that really excited me. And so while I had been continually in the background kind of developing these, you know, self-taught coding skills and not really sure what I wanted to do with it, you know, I'd built some websites for fun, made them for friend, you know, maybe made stuff for friends and family. And ultimately, I realized I wanted to combine my sort of like love of learning through technology and helping people. I knew at an earlier age that I wanted to help people, but I wasn't sure how to combine those two. And I ended up pausing school and deciding to get my first job as a developer, taking the self-taught coding skills I had and doing after doing contract and freelance work. And I landed my first job as a developer at a nonprofit. And that role allowed me to combine those things, like I mentioned, helping people and technology. And it was so much more engaging than the college classes I had been taking. And I really felt like that's where I was able to step into, you know, me defining my own career in technology. So that was sort of my entryway into tech.
Yeah, wow. That's such an interesting story. And I have a few follow-up questions with that. Did you ever end up finishing college? So it sounds like you left kind of early. Like, how much college had you gone through at that point? And did you ever go back?
That's a good question. So the other piece of that story is, and being completely transparent, it's taken me many years to start to tell this other piece of my story, that at the time I wasn't really feeling engaged in classes. I was doing okay academically, but not amazing. And I would say, growing up, I also would say I was like an A-minus student. You know, there were some classes I excelled in. I actually did really struggle with math growing up. And I later realized, you know, I had ADD or, you know, ADHD, and that contributed to a little bit of it. So dealing with that, dealing with some mental health stuff at the time, you know, for me to take that step away from college was a big deal. And I'm really lucky that my parents were able to support the decision that I decided, hey, I'm going to pause school. Maybe I'll finish school part-time. Right now, I want to get a job. I want to work. And they supported that part of my decision. And it's kind of a thing that I've had on pause for a while. And not because I don't value education. I'm a huge, huge advocate for STEM education, that for people that feel it's the right environment that they can succeed, and I'd say go for it. And I think if I'd had the option at the time for a coding bootcamp, I would have loved to do a coding bootcamp, but there weren't really any around at the time. But to answer your question, I actually didn't finish my degree, but in the last few years, I actually did a fellowship at Columbia University in entrepreneurship. So that kind of like rounded me out a little bit there. I've also done product management certification at General Assembly. So I've done a few other things to kind of boost myself up in that sense. And yeah, if there had been a coding bootcamp, I would have loved to have taken it. But what I did actually take was, one of the co-founders of Flatiron School had a course on Skillshare when Skillshare used to have in-person classes, and I took a couple of weeks program for Ruby, and that actually became the basis for Flatiron School. So it was kind of fun to take a coding bootcamp class before coding bootcamps came around, in a way.
Wow, I didn't even realize that Skillshare used to have in-person classes. That's really neat, though. And like, what an evolution that company went through too, right? They're huge now, obviously tons of online classes in a number of different areas. That's really neat. So there's so many people I speak to on the show and just in life in general who don't finish college or they don't go at all. And I don't think it's, you know, a necessity nowadays in 2020 to have a 4-year degree. But I am curious, again, just like, how far along were you when you left? Like, were you halfway through? Were you like 3/4 of the way through? Were you only 1 year through? Because, again, I'm just curious, like, how close were you to actually like finishing
that degree? Yeah, so I was 2 years into college, into undergrad. And I also had a lot of student loan debt from it, if I'm being really honest. Like, I made the conscious decision to go to school out of state. So that brought up the additional costs, even with scholarships and with grant money, you know, I was already in $20,000, $40,000 of student loan debt. And so it was like, do I want another $20,000, $40,000 of student loan debt? Or could I go and get a job and do the opposite and not take on more debt? So yeah, so I was 2 years in, said to myself, like, hey, I'm not really enjoying this. What if I went to school part-time? You know, I've toyed with a lot of ideas. And I think, like I said, I'm a huge advocate for STEM education if it's something that you really enjoy, but I don't think it's, you know, necessity. And honestly, having been a developer at different startups and companies, you know, not every single developer or engineer has a CS degree. You know, I had really amazing colleagues who had history degrees, you know, bio degrees. So totally not quote unquote STEM related. So I don't think that should hold anybody back from feeling like, oh, I don't belong, or, you know, I don't have that background.
Yeah, definitely. And I just want to say, like, I think you were super wise for your age when you were 20, or I guess you maybe were 20 at the time, if you were 2 years in, seeing the debt that you had, making that choice not to move forward because you weren't really engaged, you weren't really enjoying it. Because there's so many people who are taking student loans out, who are going to, you know, expensive schools or not within their state or what have you, and not really like thinking about it. And maybe in their mid-20s or later 20s, you know, they still have all this debt to pay off and they're kind of dealing with the consequences later. This is a whole separate conversation. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but I feel like it's so hard when you're 18 and you're going to college to really like wrap your head around how much it costs. And like that these student, if you are a person who takes out student loans, I know not everyone does, but if you do, that like these loans will follow you, you know, like it's just, I think when I was 18, like I didn't have like the mental capacity to fully understand some of these things, you know, like, and they don't teach us like personal finance in school.
Nope. Or,
yeah. So it's like, you're 18, here's all this, you know, here's a student loan debt. It's again, I would go off on a tangent. It's crazy though, because you have to be 21 to, you know, buy alcohol. There's all these processes to go through, which is to buy firearms, which is good. And, you know, you can't even, I think, rent a car until you're 25,
yep.
But you can get $100,000 of student loan debt or student loans when you're 18.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I think for me, the best way to learn what I wanted to do, and this is kind of my advice for anybody figuring out what they want to do in their tech career, is I got to learn by doing. And I say that before even I got my first job as a developer, I started doing contract freelance work, kind of dipping toes in the water and being able to see that, like, hey, this is what I like. And then even then, I later on, you know, we kind of alluded to, like, I've made shifts in my career. And so try things out. That's the beauty of tech, is you don't need a fancy degree to get started. You don't need, you know, you don't have to pass a board exam to become a developer.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And I would like to talk a bit about some of the twists and turns that you took in your journey, because if you got, okay, I'm just like thinking in my head, if you left college after 2 years, around 20, you got your first job when you were around 20 years old, most people at that age are still in college. So you had like a 2 year head start on a lot of people that were getting CS degrees or, you know, pursuing other kinds of bachelor degrees. Yeah. How has it evolved over time?
Yeah, so it, like you said, I do feel that it definitely gave me an advantage in terms of, like, I had those 2 years of experience under my belt as a developer, instead of just graduating fresh and then having to like go out and get work experience. You know, I had the work experience to build upon. And I think for me, again, I learned so much by doing in that short span of time. You know, I think looking back at it, if somebody was like, oh, would you do it again? Would you go back? Would you finish school? Would you do this, do that? And it's like the amazing things that happened to me in that short period of 2 years. You know, I turned 21 when I was at my first job, and I remember it because it was like, ooh, I'm legal. I can drink now. So yeah, I definitely wouldn't trade it for anything, because it gave me so much growing up to do in that amount of time, where I was no longer like, you know, I made the conscious decision to move to New York. I originally was in Boston for school, and my family's from the suburbs in, you know, in Long Island. And that helped me immensely to figure out what I wanted to do and who I was as a person. Sorry to get kind of deep, but it was like, yeah, it was so eye-opening for me.
Yeah, wow. And there is actually another guest that I had on the show a few seasons ago. I'm trying to remember the guest name. I'm going to have to find it later, and we'll have to link to it in the show notes, because he had a very similar experience to you, except more recently. So coding boot camps were around. And the whole interview, he talks about his decision to leave college to go to a coding boot camp instead. And then when I interviewed him, he had already gotten his first job after the coding boot camp, and he wasn't 21 yet. I think he could have even been like 19 or something. And it was just really interesting, especially for those who maybe are still in college, which I know a lot of the listeners aren't in college still. They're after college. But in case anyone's listening who happens to still be in college and thinking about if finishing the degree is right for them or not, we'll make sure to include that. Anyhow, oh, I'm glad you mentioned where you grew up, because when you said that you went to the MIT summer camp, I was wondering if that was near, like, did you go there, like, and you, like, slept there, like a summer camp, or was it close to your home?
That's a good question. So it's ID Tech camps, and they have different locations at different universities during, like, the summer. And so I stayed with my sister who lives in Boston, and so I slept on her couch, and I babysat my niece in exchange for her paying for my summer camp. And that experience actually made me go, wow, I really like Boston as a city. I want to, you know, go here for college. And like that actually prompted me to also move away from home, because my parents were basically like, hey, if you end up getting into one of the local universities, which I had even more, I would have been better financially, and I would have had scholarship opportunities. They were like, you're living at home. And I was like, I don't want to live at home. I'm ready to be an adult. So despite the student loans, I am glad that it gave me the opportunity to start being an adult.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit, because there's this interesting point in your experience I want to talk about. And it was when you started Coder Dojo NYC. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I first started learning to code, seeing that online, and it was a nonprofit that taught kids how to code, right? Could you talk a bit about that and like how you started it?
Yeah. So that kind of transition I mentioned about, like, okay, getting my first job as a developer, and thinking back on that summer program experience that I had, I wanted to volunteer. And so even though I worked at a nonprofit, I was still like, hey, I want to give back. I want to teach. I want to do something. But I didn't want to teach at a summer program, because that would imply I would be teaching full time in that summer, because I did that at the program as well. I went back and I taught at that program while I was in college. So that kind of like cemented my roots of like wanting to teach kids to code. And I started looking around, and there were maybe only a few nonprofits at the time that were teaching kids to code, but they all required a CS degree or a very big time commitment of like, you're here every, you know, Thursday afternoon during the entire school semester or for an entire year. And so it was like this really big commitment. And I happened to find out about this thing called Coder Dojo, which is a global movement of free coding clubs for kids. And ironically, it was actually founded by two people who also stopped out of formal education. So totally not against the idea, again, of education. So it's this idea of like self-teaching and self-learning and encouraging that in kids. And so essentially like, you know, a co-ed version of like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts. And I actually met my co-founder through Twitter back in the day. I met him, didn't turn out to be a serial killer. And so I was like, okay, well, let's just try this thing. You know, let's try this thing. Let's try hosting like, you know, these workshops or host this club, you know, let's see what this is like. And it's just amazing how much it grew. So we were able to turn this little like, okay, we want to teach kids to code, into events that ended up going from, you know, a couple of kids, you know, a couple of volunteers, to, you know, half day hackathon style events where kids could come in and pick a learning station, and they can learn hardware, they can learn Python, they can learn an array of different things and kind of whatever their heart desired, and give them that, you know, opportunity to kind of dig in deep to something where it was just amazing to me. So we grew our events to essentially, I would say 100, 120 people with like a waiting list of like 100 kids. And it was just really crazy to see how quickly it picked up. And I think giving kids that opportunity to learn at a younger age where it's not just, oh, you know, go and get a STEM-related CS degree or something so that you'll have a good job. It's what is your passion? What is it that you're really interested in? And these kids normally sit in classrooms for you know, like 40 minutes, 45 minutes per class, an hour per class, and they are fully engaged for, you know, the 2 hours that they get to work on an app or a website or something that they're passionate about. And for me, that's the idea of success, is that we're, you know, allowing them to explore their creativity and build things. So that's the community nonprofit that I co-founded, and we put it on pause last year when my co-founder passed away, but it's still there in the sense that we still plan on, you know, running these really awesome workshops.
Yeah. And again, with the co-founder, I'm really sorry about that. That was really sad and, you know, unexpected. And it's nice to know, though, that you may still, you know, pick it up again, and it's still there and available for people in the future. And it's also awesome that you did it for so many years, because I feel like when I first came upon it, it was a while ago. And you were running these workshops and these different events for kids while working full time and doing other stuff. And when you were just speaking, like, your most recent work experience hasn't been related to nonprofits or working with kids. And I'm curious, like, how did doing that, like, or the Coder Dojo help your career in ways, maybe in, like, unforeseen ways?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the, you know, you can think of it as like a passion project or something that's always kind of been running in the background, but really it set me up for these invaluable skills that I developed, which were public speaking. So I started to do a lot more public speaking. In fact, I ended up doing paid public speaking. I traveled to, because of my nonprofit work, for the most part, outside of my, you know, day job work, I was able to travel to 7 countries and, you know, speak at those different countries. So I always like to recommend that as like the side benefit of building your personal brand and doing public speaking. And, you know, I was able to travel and speak. I would say most notably, like, I was able to do, the U.S. State Department has a speaker program. And so I was able to travel to Kazakhstan and do a countrywide multi-city workshops on STEM education and entrepreneurship. And I did that in Pakistan as well. And, you know, I love that. So yeah, so the public speaking was a really big part of it. The idea that I can manage large scale events, I know how to do sponsorships, I know how to do all these things that are otherwise outside of the scope of like a normal tech career. So I recommend that to people, is if you have a passion project or, you know, you get involved with a, you know, an organization or a club, it's such an amazing way to not only do those types of things, but to also make connections that I think, you know, will help you not just in your career, but, you know, I've made such good friends from my nonprofit work, which I wasn't expecting at all.
Yeah, that's amazing. And sorry if you already said this, but what year did you start it?
So it was 2012, I think.
Okay, that makes sense, because I would have started learning in 2013 and during 2013, 2014, Googling a bunch, looking for a bunch of events, because I myself was trying to go to events in like the greater New York City area. And I definitely remember seeing yours because it was just for kids, so I couldn't go.
Yeah, but that was the side other benefit of it too, was that the people that were volunteering and teaching weren't necessarily teachers. And I forgot to mention this, they're not necessarily teachers. And we actually encourage people who are learning to code to come teach kids, because then it's such a good opportunity to like flex your skills and, you know, hang out with cute kids. I don't know. they were just so fun and sweet, where they were like, it just as they were figuring out who they were and what they wanted to do. So,
yeah. So all while this was going on, so this was, you just said you started that in 2012. You've done a bunch beyond just the nonprofit. Like, that's almost like its own career in itself. And then you've actually have like your whole other career. And you, as you said already, you were working as a developer, and then you got into product management, right? Could you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So one of my first jobs was as a developer at Squarespace. And while I was at Squarespace, we grew, just for like context, we grew from 250 to 500 people. So it was like really cool to be at a startup at that time that, you know, it was really taking off. And I was a developer evangelist. And so I spent half my time coding and I spent the other half of my time, I like to call it technical PR. So doing events and teaching. So that's actually kind of where some of my Coder Dojo stuff kind of fit in, is the teaching, the education part of things. So trying to get more developers onto our platform. And I realized that I had this inkling of an idea that I was like, I like coding for fun, but maybe I don't like doing it full time. And like, that's okay. Like, I still like being involved in technical things, technical projects. And I realized I wanted to be a part of like bigger strategy type of stuff of like, what are we building? Why are we building this? And, you know, I think product management wasn't as prevalent at the time. And at Squarespace, it wasn't, because there were no product managers when I started. And this is, we grew to 250, 500 people with eventually only one product manager. And it wasn't until a year after, you know, that they started bringing on other product manager or bring on other product managers. So this idea of product management was new, and I realized, though, I had been doing pieces of it. So in my job to get more developers onto the developer platform, I started doing, you know, customer interviews or target market interviews, where I started like reaching out to the people that we thought were, you know, the most valuable people on our platform who are making lots of Squarespace sites. And when I started talking to them, I realized like, hey, we're actually targeting the wrong people. Like, these are really great people, but they don't fit into the initial mold of what we thought who these people were who were, you know, building our platform. And so that got me introduced to the idea of product management. So I realized, I was like, this is what I really want to move towards. And so I moved into another role where I was doing product management. And this idea of, for anyone who's not familiar with product management, this intersection of like technology, so, you know, building technical products, software, you know, apps, things like that, but then also figuring out, well, what is it that like the business needs, you know, like you're thinking of the business, and then the other piece of that pie is like, what is the user experience and how can we build things that are going to be beneficial? So not just beneficial to other people and give the stuff away for free, but like, how can we sell this? How can we get more people to buy it? How can, you know, kind of thinking of all those pieces. So for me, that was really interesting. So I started moving towards that. And the next role that I took on was actually a program management role at Microsoft. And so that tech education background, I managed a full-time technical training program for underserved New Yorkers. But then I also started tinkering with more product management. And I did end up doing the General Assembly's like certificate program in product management to kind of round myself out a bit more and formalize some of the product management that I had been doing in little bits and pieces. And I often find that that's how a lot of people transition into product management, is that they've done little bits and pieces of product management, or they're interested in the strategy side of things and they want to be more involved in like some of the decision making.
Yeah. Wow, Rebecca, you have such an awesome story. And it's like so much experience and things packed into such a short time. It's extremely impressive. And I feel like we could talk about that for like hours, but I really want to talk about some of the stuff you're doing today, because you're now helping people in their own tech career. You're a tech career coach, and you have different kinds of like products and offerings and coaching that you do with people. I would love to hear like how you got into that and what that looks like.
Yeah. So while I made those transitions for myself, like I didn't really feel like I had a guiding source of information. I think there's a lot of resources and materials out there on, you know, maybe tips on interviewing, maybe tips on your resume. And I kind of had to figure out a lot of these things on my own. And I think one of those key pieces was also shaping my story. So like, we've heard little bits and, you know, we were talking about little bits and pieces of it, but how do you like refine that for whatever your next role is? And especially if you're transitioning into tech, how do you do that? And, you know, I used to be reached out to all the time to meet for coffee, you know, so a lot of young women would reach out to me and say, hey, you know, can you meet for coffee? I was giving up my like lunch breaks all the time as a developer and, you know, meeting people and giving them advice. And then eventually I was like, okay, what if I can actually turn these techniques and strategies that I've used myself and things that I've taught some other people and turn it into something that is not only sustainable for myself, but also going to allow people to take it further. or take their careers further. And so I moved into doing career coaching. And so this idea of career coaching isn't just like, okay, here's your resume, you're done. But like, how do you continue to develop your skills and give yourself a pathway, especially now in tech? You know, you might only be at a company for, you know, a couple of years here, a couple of years there. How do you like craft a bigger pathway for yourself? So some of the things that I do, you know, besides kind of the coaching, I think there's a big piece around imposter syndrome as well, which is something that I constantly work with people on. But I would say one of the bigger pieces that seems to be a stumbling block early on, especially, is resumes. And so one of the things that I, you know, developed and, you know, I'm really excited as a part of the Tech Career Bundle is the six-figure resume workshop. And so having a six-figure tech resume, I think, meaning it's not just that you have a resume and it's done, but how does it really craft the narrative of where you're going and really stand out? And that's something I'm super, super excited that I hope people can get their hands on.
Yeah. And we're so happy that you're taking part in that and have graciously offered this product of yours on resume writing to be part of it, because it is something that I think even if you're more experienced, whether you're like brand new or more experienced, resume writing can be really hard because there's so much that goes into it, like how to craft your past experience for the relevant job that you're now applying for, and all of that. So actually, if you could give us like a few little tips about resume writing, that would be awesome. Like just like a few little quick bites.
Yeah, definitely. So some of the things that I talk about in the pre-work for the workshop is the three secrets to a six-figure tech resume. And, you know, those three secrets being readability, you know, how easy is it to read your resume? A lot of times people coming from other industries and who have a lot of experience might think, oh, I've got to put in all of, you know, all of the words and all of the phrases of like how important the work that I'm doing is. But it's like, if it's not easy to read, then it's going to be a lot harder for people to be able to understand it. And another big piece I talk about is robot friendliness. And what I mean by that is similar to the way Google search engine works, where it's looking for different keywords. For companies, they have their own system that kind of works like a search engine. And what it's doing is it's looking for keywords as well. So they're called applicant tracking systems. And so it's looking for keywords to match up your job to, or the job that you're applying to your resume. So, you know, we talk about how do you pick out the right keywords to include on your resume. And so as I was going from developer to product manager, that was something I had to learn, which is like, how do I switch some of the keywords and how I'm framing some of my experience to be more relevant to product management? So that was the other piece. And the third secret or third R is relatability. So how is it, you know, related to that role? So how do you, again, how do you kind of like craft that narrative of like, how is your work experience related? So I talk about those things and then I go in depth in the workshop itself on like, here is how we go section by section and make sure that your resume aligns with those pieces. And no matter what type of role you're applying to or you're interested in, this will be applicable to you. And so, yeah, so I'm so excited that I was able to put together that in a workshop and that, you know, it's a product that you'll be able to get your hands on as a part of the bundle. And yeah, so how relatable is your experience to the role? And if it's not the exact experience, that's totally okay. It's how do you translate it? You know, is it robot friendly? What are the keywords like? And is it readable? Can like a human read it as well? So that's definitely some of the key pieces to keep in mind.
Yeah, when you were talking about readability, this phrase came into my mind, which is if you confuse people, you lose people.
That's
so
a good
it's
one.
Yeah, so like just, and that can go beyond a resume, that can go with anything in life. If you confuse people with a bunch of, you know, information or hard to kind of follow stories and plots, you'll lose them, right? They can't, yeah, it won't be readable essentially. I had another question, because this is something that when I was applying for jobs I did, but I just want to hear your thoughts since you're like an expert on this. What's your thought on doing a unique resume for every job you apply for? So
that
essentially,
is a great question.
That is, yeah, because I would do that. So I would have different resume versions, and then I would tweak it accordingly depending on like where I was sending it off to.
I think that is a great idea. I'll preface this with some of my methodology. So In the beginning, I tell people to focus on quantity instead of quality. So like, don't spend 3 hours for every time you're sending your resume out, but exactly what you're saying, how can you get versions of your resume out and test them and see if they're getting responses? And so if they're not getting responses, then you know maybe it's something on your resume to tweak. If they're getting rejections, that means it's a little bit better. That means it's getting read by somebody. So then, okay, how do you take it the step further after that? So I think that is a really good piece of advice, is to create, you know, 2 versions of your resume to start to test it. And if you are applying for, say, 2 different types of roles or sort of sub roles, for example, product management, but then 1 resume for product management and then one for mobile product management, you know, that has more specific experience to mobile product management. So if you can ideally narrow it down to 2 types of roles, whether they're sort of similar or related like that, or, you know, in my case, when I went from developer to product manager, I still kept myself open to both types of roles because I was like, well, I don't know. You know, it's hard to, you know, base things off of a job description. You won't really know what a company's like until you're actually interviewing and talking to the hiring manager at the least. So keeping an open mind, I think, is really important.
Yeah, that's a good tip. And also what you said a bit ago about not spending 3 hours necessarily to apply to like every single position. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So a few other, like, I'm saying rapid fire, but this isn't like technically rapid fire. I just want to get your advice on a few different things. And one of those is imposter syndrome. So you mentioned a bit ago that that's like an area you focus on a lot. What kind of tips do you have for someone who may be feeling that way?
Yeah. So one of my favorite quotes is, don't compare your beginning to someone else's middle, because it's really easy to look at the high level and say, oh, this person looks like they had it all figured out. They have this traditional background, you know, and in reality, you know, your career is a solo sport in a way. You know, oftentimes we're taught to base our self-worth or how, you know, how much money we can, you know, like money we can make. We're like looking at all these external factors when in fact that self-confidence can really only come from within. And so if we're even just looking at the example of interviewing, the reason I say quantity instead of quality is because you want to get on those phone screens and you, for maybe for roles that you're not as interested in, put yourself out there to get that experience of interviewing itself, you know, use those as practice interviewing. I think, you know, a lot of people are always like, oh, mock interviews. Like, mock interviews are nice, but what's really good is, you know, when you put yourself out there and you start to get real world feedback, and then you start to realize you're like, hey, I've got this within myself. It's not, you know, we're constantly, I think, looking for external things to validate ourselves, when in fact, the only way we can validate ourselves and start to break through imposter syndrome is when we are able to see that it's within us. And, you know, we kind of talked about my career journey and that story, you know, that how I made those transitions. Like, there, I can't ever say like there was a time where I was like, I felt 110% and I knew like I was going to get this job and whatever. Like, I just knew to kind of bring my best self and know that, you know, if they valued me the way that, you know, I'm really interested in their company, it was going to be a good fit and it was going to be a good experience. And if it's not, then it's not. There's the one mindset tip that I want people to keep in mind when they're going through rejection is like, instead of saying like, oh, that was my dream job and that was the thing I really wanted and getting worked up about it, you know, is if it's not this one, then there's one even better for me, you know, whether that's a role, whatever opportunity that is for you, because there is, I can count, you know, countless of times that I dodged a bullet, so to speak, in terms of things that might have not been right for me, not good opportunities, when in fact there was other ones out there that were even better.
Yep, I can totally relate to that. And this next question could also be an entire episode in itself, but I just would love to hear your thoughts on advice for people right now that are tech job hunting during this coronavirus pandemic situation we're finding ourselves in that no one planned for.
Totally. Yeah. I think even now more than ever, keeping an open mind to the types of roles that you're going to be seeing and applying. And it's okay if you are taking a stepping stone type of role, you know, where it's not your dream role, but like, what are the other things that you could gain out of that valuable experience? Whether that's like being able to work in the framework or the language that you are interested in, or maybe that's, hey, I get to, you know, be in a different city or location, or I get to try out this different industry. So think of it instead of trying to put all your eggs in one basket, you know, going open-minded into a lot of roles and opportunities. And I think also keeping open-minded to contract and freelance work as well. I think those are good options to build your portfolio, gain experience, and earn money, you know, in the interim while you figure out, you know, what is that next step for you. So you are in control of your future. Yes, the circumstances aren't great, but you have the opportunity to take advantage of opportunities and to put yourself out there. So don't be too discouraged by the current situation. I think, you know, yes, especially if you've been impacted by it, I understand it's, you know, a very, very hard time. But I think at the same time, you know, there are companies that are still hiring. Tech is the best positioned industry to work remotely and to hire people. And so in that sense, yes, there are companies affected, but there are also companies that are hiring. And, you know, tech is a great industry to be in.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So is there any final advice that you can share with listeners who are trying to break into tech?
That's a good question. I guess we mentioned, you know, don't compare your beginning to other people's middle. Or yes, I think I might have said my core wrong, but I think, you know, when it comes to imposter syndrome, I think don't let that be a label that is going to prevent you from taking action. I think the biggest piece of advice I have is take imperfect action. You know, you're not going to feel 100%, and, you know, you're always going to say, oh, I wish I felt ready, or, you know, maybe there's a better time out there for me. Instead of thinking that, think of what is the 1% that you can continue making yourself better by. Instead of trying to go to 0 to 100, how can you just have a continual, you know, improvement mindset of progress, instead of feeling like, oh, I'm not enough, I don't have enough skills, or, you know, this and that. So take imperfect action, and don't be afraid to ask for help. You know, I think amazing resources like this podcast and your blog are great places to start and start to get some of that support. So yeah, I want to encourage people to, you know, not be afraid to fail. It's only failure if you don't learn anything from it.
That was great. Thank you for all those little tidbits. I love the take imperfect action. And as you said, instead of focusing on like really big jumps forward, like 1% every day, because if you keep making little progress, you know, every single day, in a few years, it's going to amount to something really great and terrific. Anyhow, thank you so much, Rebecca, for coming on. Where can people find you online?
So thanks so much for having me. And people can find me online on Instagram at RebeccaGarcia.tech, as well as my website, RebeccaGarcia.tech, and on Twitter, RebeccaGarcia.tech, because there's a character limit.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for listening today. If you missed anything or would like a recap, you can find the show notes at learntocodewith.me/podcast. If you're listening to this episode in the future, simply click the search icon in the upper website navigation and search for the guest name. Now, if you're listening to this interview around the time that it airs, I want to tell you about something special that we're doing, our annual bundle sale. This is also known as the Ultimate Tech Career Toolbox. This is the biggest thing that we do all year. For 5 days only, you can get access to over 30 tech products, which together amounts to be over $4,000. And for these 5 days, you can get all these products for a fraction of that. The sale is happening this year in 2020 from Monday, June 22nd to Friday, June 26th. And when you invest in our 2020 bundle, you'll get access to a collection of products that can help you level up your coding skills and break into the tech industry. As a buyer from last year's bundle sale said, "I was skeptical at first. Thousands of dollars in courses for hundreds of dollars sounded way too good to be true. But the Ultimate Tech Career Toolbox turned out to be the best way to save a whole bunch of time and spend a fraction of the price you would trying to get all these courses separately." Get notified when the sale opens up by signing up over at learntocodewith.me/toolbox2020. Again, the URL is learntocodewith.me/toolbox2020. All right, I'll see you next week.